Well, good morning, everybody. This is our continuing foray into the world of podcasting. I think Joe Rogan sleeps very soundly at night. I'm not very worried about it at all. But a couple of stuff going on. It's Fed week, Fed day. Fed's likely to tighten. Any comments, my friends?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they're going to cut another 25 basis points tomorrow after, after the meeting. And, I think the bottom line here is that the bar for the terminal Fed funds rate continues to move higher. At the beginning of the year, it was closer to 3%. We're looking at something around, call it 3.75 now on the lower end of the range. It appears that inflation is starting to become a little concern of the markets overall, I would say, based on where the markets move in the Fed funds rate.
But the Fed's following the market, so they're going to ease. There's no doubt about that, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's a done deal.
Here's the question for you. I don't know whether or not artistic bananas are part of the CPI, but we had one sell recently for how many million?
Six and change.
And then the guy ate it?
Yeah. That's cryptocurrency for you.
We have core prices, to the extent they call them core, because there's lots of stuff that they don't call core that are essential living, moving up. House prices are firm, and rents are moving up. The thing that bothers me most about the Fed here is that they're adding more liquidity to a bonfire that's already burning like mad. Is that fair to say, or am I just revealing my inner bond?
So what I think is interesting, it's going to be 3 months since the first cut of the cycle. And unless it's been cash or high yield, fixed income is down across the board, which is different than the average move 3 months following other cutting cycles from 95, 01, 07, and 2019. So bonds are not necessarily providing the protection that they normally do following a cut.
But I think it was, if memory serves me right, you can Google it to see whether it's true. In 1994, I think high yield might have been the top performing fixed income sector. Yeah. Bonds were down and stocks were up. And we're in a, appears to be a Fed cycle that has successfully engineered a soft landing, at the, one of the rarest birds in the Fed lexicon.
Remarkably similar to today. But as you said, the spirits are certainly stirring. We have the leverage to inverse ETF AUM ratio at about 13 times, which is a record over the last 14 years of data. So that means there's a ton of money piling into leverage long ETFs.
Right. So the markets anticipate the Fed ease as it's done all along, and investors are all up. They're all going, I'm happy to take it on leverage. My rates are going to go down and that asset price is going to go up. And you're telling me also about flows here into stocks relative to bonds are historic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been all in. Right, all in to equity ETFs. And bond ETFs have done well. They've had a record year, but it's been far more aggressive for stocks. And part of that is structural movement out of mutual funds ETFs. But you also look at, say, the fringe areas of ETFs. You're seeing money go into crypto, more volatile areas of more nascent, right, themes into the equity area. So it's everyone in the pool right now.
Even the Bitcoin miners.
Miners are perking up. That's how you know it's very risk on, and that can persist. But
and sentiment is consistent with that price action, right?
And I think sentiment shows up in one of your favorite companies out there. Tesla continues to make new highs every.
Tesla's amazing. The Dow's down 270 points or last I looked, and Tesla is at another new record high. The talk in the background is Reuters yesterday reported that the administration has agreed to pull back EV subsidies, which is a price increase. So therefore, you have to raise the price or cut the price, to offset the loss of the subsidy. Toyota's already done that. They have a slow selling vehicle that I think they're cutting the price on $6,000. But the point is, any place where you've removed the government subsidies, including Germany, including Norway, which is nirvana to the EV crowd, sales have slowed. So Tesla is likely to be picking up market share, but in a market that is shrinking.
Yeah, but Tesla's a, and let's not talk about Tesla specifically. Let's talk about Elon Musk, right? He's a little, he's obviously close to the incoming administration. He has a desire to push forward autonomous vehicles. And if you look back to the previous period where Trump was in the administration, he was pro autonomous vehicles. And I think that's the angle that Trump, that Elon Musk is going for here. He's going for, you know, he wants to move forward with autonomous driving. The other angle, which is SpaceX is continues to see its valuation soar here. And obviously Elon Musk is another, it's another one of his wizardry companies out there. He, you know, that's, I think the last valuation I saw was $350 billion. Trump was a big proponent of Space Force. Seems like those contracts are going to keep rolling in for him. Now, I forget the number that he spent on, leading up to the election, but it's, you know, the ROI he's received.
Yeah, I think he spent $277 million. I think that was the last number I saw. And it was pretty effective. I mean, the other crowd spent $1.4 billion or more when you combine everybody spending the money for, and they spent it foolishly. They should have had like a lottery.
You're just upset that you weren't one of the speakers chosen for one of them.
Well, I love the story, the New York Times, of the story that Oprah denied accepting a fee, but her production company might have received a fee of $2.5 million. And the same is true for the other celebrities where they did, they went for free, but their entourage charged millions of dollars. But let's bring it back.
So another thing that I saw today, and I'd be curious what the stock's doing, Todd, is Chipotle is actually they said they're going to increase prices across the board about 2%. So that's another sign that inflation's starting to come back into the fast casual. Yeah, the stock is down on that news.
Nope.
But 2% is a low number. I mean, it's less than food away from home in the CPI, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But this is not the first time that they've increased it 2%.
Oh, you mean this is another increase in the past 12 months?
That's what I saw.
You're a shade off of a new high from Chipotle. So,
but I mean, the other thing I will say though is that if we do get a little bit of additional inflation here, that's actually usually pretty good for profits. It's when you start to see a significant uptick. Inflation for profits usually gets passed along in the early stages. So these companies become a little more profitable initially before
consumers fight back.
Fight back, yeah.
They say cut back. We say fight back.
Why do you think Chipotle is almost at new high? And then you have restaurant brands, which is Burger King and Tim Hortons. Maybe that's Canadian exposure. Kind of on the verge of a new low here.
There's the perception that Chipotle is healthy.
It's better for you. In fact, I went to a wine dinner recently up in Connecticut at Val Bella, very wonderful Italian place. And you think about the wine business right now, right? This is a high-end retailer. He talks about people sitting on the porch enjoying his Chardonnay, which sells for $86. I remember during the initial push to legalize marijuana, it was Brown-Forman that was one of the biggest lobbies. It wasn't the Southern Baptist Convention or the American Temperance League. It was Brown-Forman that was arguing against marijuana because it would diminish sales of hard liquor. And that's happened. And now you have marijuana perhaps intruding into the wine business. And then you have this report out recently that suggested alcohol is bad for you.
And here's Brown-Forman stock. That's just the same thing.
Oof.
Not great.
Oof. That's three tipples and a stumble, I think you call that.
Instead, you should be drinking Celsius, perhaps, instead.
What is Celsius?
Celsius is some sort of athletic drink that's supposed to help you burn fat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Good. Another thing I need to buy this. So can we talk about international for a minute? Chinese bonds, new record low. And they responded to economic news that was weaker, home prices and retail sales, in a manner that was bullish for bonds, which was consistent with what you would expect. Rather than a technical adjustment. Thoughts there, particularly in lieu of the rally the equity market's had?
Bonds are not buying it, or yields are not buying it, rather, right? And we've all talked about this before. This is an absolute free fall here, right? And
it's not a big market. It's not a free market, right?
No, not, I mean, neither is the equity market, I think, right?
But the government, I remember in August, was bearish bonds.
Yeah, so the opposite's played out here.
So, and the reason is, I think the Chinese government wants to control everything. I don't know whether that's news to everybody listening. They want to control everything, including your thoughts. So they are basically trying to monetize the economy. They made that announcement recently, easy monetary conditions. So bonds are rallying. Stocks, I suppose, are for your date to Todd, they're up, or if they stumbled recently? Yeah,
they're up because of the huge move that happened earlier in the fall. But if one thing has played out that we suggested would play out, has been volatile, right? You ran up 30-40%, you've corrected 20-30% in some cases. So whether or not the low is in for the equity market, and you look at the currency, you look at the yields here, they're suggesting something different. You need to take a Tums when you're buying China.
Okay, so let's think about this more broadly, though. This you know, as bond yields move lower in China, that should ultimately put a floor on yields globally, and you know, maybe.
Right. Yeah, I get that, but here's the other question: is the weakness in China bullish for the U.S. inflation picture because it keeps energy prices lower than they'd be, and copper prices lower than they'd be, and all the other stuff that they might consume lower than they'd be? And how are those prices? How are metal prices into China? Non-ferrous metals, people are weak too.
So here's one of the things that I think is going to be different in a potential reacceleration of inflation. Everyone wants to focus on energy and the metals and mining. I don't think that's where the inflation is going to show up. If you look at you know, where inflation is potentially going to be in the U.S., it's going to be in utility bills. Everyone pays their utility bills, and they know that prices have only gone higher. If you think about what we're doing here domestically, in terms of the data centers are going to consume massive amounts of electricity. There's more competition for electricity, and we need it. We need significantly more power generation over the, say, the next 5 to 10 years. We have price agnostic buyers of electricity now in these Magnificent Seven companies who want to buy, and they're competing with the small man on the consumer side of things.
Well, the regulators are going to step in and stop that.
They're right? Going to have to, yes.
So I have a friend of mine who's done quite well, and he had a mining operation in Elizabeth, New Jersey, because the state of New Jersey offered incentives for businesses to set up inside this industrial zone, and they offered them 10 cents an hour where he was busily making Bitcoin. Of course, that should stop. But utility bills are also driven higher by the regulators themselves, because when your neighbor puts up a solar panel on his roof, he can sell that. It's subsidized. It's completely crazy. I'm going to drop a name here a little bit. I know that lots of people drop names of central bankers. I talked to Axel Weber, former head of UBS and former head of the Bundesbank for a couple of years. And he talked about how this EV stuff was lowering the cost the standard of living in Germany and has created this angst in Germany, which the government, as you know, this past week has fallen. They're going to call for new elections. But he said that they've handled the energy transition the wrong way, that they should have handled the grid first before they had put all the ornaments on the tree, you know, EVs and the other types of electrification. Because right now he claimed that many German EVs are powered by coal. They've reopened up the strip mines. And in Shanghai, where you have a great EV presence on the street, those cars are powered also by coal. Nothing's clean, nothing's safe, nothing. Everything works the opposite.
Just think about the amount of oil that has to go into putting up, say, a wind turbine. Think about the size of the cement.
You mentioned the wind turbine. There's this show, I haven't watched it yet, but you've recommended, other people have. What's it called?
It's called The Landman.
It's on Paramount Plus. You're going to have to watch it on Paramount Plus.
It is really good.
I know someone did send me a clip where he rips into windmills out there.
Yeah, windmills, everything. We were actually, I was in Omaha last week, and driving down the highway from Omaha to Lincoln, we saw one of the wind turbines. And the things are absolutely massive.
Enormous.
Enormous. It's, you know, it's larger than you could ever imagine until you see them in person. And it was on a, you know, it was being pulled by a diesel truck to get it out to where it needed to go. So,
it's more than that, because the story is, this is what I read all the time in Bloomberg, is that the new alternate energy is too cheap to meter kind of stuff, what they used to say about nuclear when they introduced it. But I don't think that's true. For example, the wind power in the Northeast, they're quoting the wind power, but they're not counting it connecting to the grid. When you do that, it is not as competitive as fossil fuels. We're going to be burning fossil fuels for a long period of time, like it or not. We should make a shift from coal to natural gas, because it cleans the air and moves you forward. Nothing is perfect. If you want perfection, you should go someplace else. Gallup had a survey of the top 25 issues in October going into the election, And climate change was either 24 or 25 on the list of 25. Let's get out of this for a little bit. Let's talk about the strength of the U.S. bond market, or lack thereof. That U.S. 10-year notes, I think, are probably the most important price in the world. High yields on fire. Corporate spreads are tight. Todd, do you have a view? We're in a tight trading range here. We're going to break a range one way or another.
I don't think I have much of an opinion, to be honest. We've been in a range for 2 years. So until you get some decisive
what
move,
about the Bund?
I think Bund's, a little bit weaker. And maybe China's the catalyst that starts to drag all this down. I don't know. But you think about U.S. rates, U.S. dollar, and U.S. oil, WTI oil, all range-bound. Meanwhile, the S&P's almost 30% for the year.
I did see an article yesterday in the FT. They talked about Moody's downgraded France over the weekend. And they said that the bond market had moved on it. I think the move was one basis point. When you read it, what we're really talking about was spreads relative to the Bund. Yeah. It was sort of a silly article because one basis point is, it's a pimple on the cow's ass.
Well, that's just to come back to the U.S. market for a second here. I mean, one of the things that I struggle with most is it really attractive to buy high yield bonds here with spreads at all time tights? So you could say the same for investment grades. You know, generally investors want to buy them when spreads are wide, and you know it's kind of hard to.
Ryan, I know you have fewer wrinkles than I do, but investors don't want to buy them when spreads are wide. That's why the spreads are wide.
Yeah, but that's when you get the largest returns.
Well, you just said you were out in Nebraska, right?
Sure.
I don't know. Do people still live in Nebraska?
Of course, it's heavily populated.
Heavily populated. What does that mean? Yeah, 14.
There was some traffic.
1,200.
There was some traffic.
Warren Buffett is building. Yeah. Can you say he's bearish? He's building a war chest here of cash.
I think he's an outlier.
I was going to say. I mean, just the fact that he's sitting on $300 billion+ of cash suggests that he. To me, at least, suggests that he sees a potential opportunity to come to put some of that money to work. He's also a lot more patient than most other investors, and he will.
Well, he can't be that patient. He's 95.
but he is getting four and a quarter percent on his cash, so maybe he's happy with that at 95.
He's going to spend his cash. He's going to try to bribe St. Peter at the end of his day. So who knows? What else?
Well, Ryan and I were also in Nashville, which I kind of get a vibe from Omaha. It might be a Nashville type up and coming. Place we sampled the barbecue.
Oh yeah,
it was lovely.
Yeah, we went to this
reasonably priced.
That was. I would say that's one of the biggest things when you travel outside of the tri-state area is that food is more reasonably priced than it is here, and that's probably more of a function of the real estate and wages in these regions that we spend most of our days in. But
I did see. I think. Dan Clifton mentioned on his call the other day that Robert Kennedy is one of the most popular cabinet choices for Donald Trump. And, of course, he's opposed to highly processed foods. There was a book out by a British author about highly processed foods. And there was a recent story in the FT about how highly processed foods might be behind the rise in colorectal cancers among young people, that they're discovering some sort of link there. Well, the New York Times knows that anything that Donald Trump is suggestive of or in favor of must be something wrong about it. So they had an essayist yesterday talking about that ultra-processed foods, they're not really all bad. We don't have all the science in. They could still work for us. And she mentioned in her vitae at the end that she was selling like a Beyond Meat kind of food because it's good for the planet. These alternate foods that they're coming up with might be good for the planet. They're bad for your heart. But we'll let that high sodium level just pass away.
Yeah, you can get Beyond Meat for less than a cup of coffee.
Yeah, remember when it was $200?
Yeah, it was all the rage.
I do remember Don Richmiller sent me a something during the pandemic of grocery shelves picked bare.
And the
except for Beyond Beef.
We're coming up on 20 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, any other inputs you'd like to?
Pardon me, we'll cut that up. I do think also a lot of this is the enthusiasm for the Trump agenda, whatever it is. Trump mentioned in Mar-a-Lago, he said with the head of SoftBank there, he said, last time everybody fought me. Now everybody's in love with me. And I think, Maybe, you know, something's going to happen. Maybe it will be one of those drones that we'll discover.
Mysterious drones.
Those New Jersey drones.
New Jersey drones. Or maybe it's just hysteria. You know, H.G. Wells got New Jersey all excited back in the 30s when he had War of the Worlds. And then, if you remember the remake with Tom Cruise.
I liked the remake.
That remake, that first saucer, whatever it was, came out of Hoboken, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Were you part of it?
No. It's a good movie, though.
I like the. That's a very good remake.
Okay.
One of Tom Cruise's finest.
Well, we'll try to do this before the upcoming holiday. Thank you very much. And, of course, keep those cards and letters, which we never get, coming.